Welcome to the Plant Spirit Podcast on connecting with plant consciousness and the healing wisdom of nature. If you'd like to learn more on how to communicate directly with plants, visit www.learnplantlanguage.com to register for the free workshop. That's www.learnplantlanguage.com. I'm your host, Sarah Artemisia, and I'm deeply honored to introduce our next guest to the show today. Nina Simons is an author and the co-founder of Bioneers, which is a nonprofit that lifts up visionary and practical solutions for many of our most pressing social and ecological challenges to reveal a regenerative and equitable future that's within our reach today. As a social entrepreneur, Nina is passionate about reinventing leadership, restoring the feminine, and co-creating a healthy, peaceful, and equitable world for all. She speaks and teaches internationally at schools, conferences, and festivals, and she co-facilitates transformative workshops and retreats on regenerative leadership through reclaiming wholeness and relational mindfulness. Nina is the author of Nature, Culture, and the Sacred, and co-editor of Moonrise, The Power of Women Bleeding from the Heart. So Nina, thank you so much for being here. Such a joy to have you.
It's such a delight to be with you, Sarah, and with your listeners. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you. So yeah, there's so many things I'm excited to dive into today. And the first thing really is this very core question of, in your experience, why is it so important for us to remember and reclaim our sacred relationship with the earth?
Well, I think as you identified earlier, Sarah, I'm a pattern seeker. And our relationship with the earth is simply one of many octaves of relationship that we live within. So for some reason, I seem to have been born into this life with a particular resonance with what creates healthy relationship. And what I've seen is that what's broken or not working in our world is a lack of integrity in our relational fields, both within ourselves, because we all have so much conditioning to judge or beat ourselves up or limit our capacities, but also with each other, as evidenced by the high divorce rate and everything else that's happening in the world, and our relationship to the earth, which of course we're experiencing a wake-up call from Mother Life right now that's enormous and existential. And so my sense is that part of what Bioneers has taught me is that it's all connected and it's all relatives. And there's a poem that my husband wrote to describe Bioneers, which is, it's all alive, it's all intelligent, it's all connected, it's all relatives. And so rekindling a sacred relationship with the earth, and really the way I see it is that rekindling a sacred relationship with nature is one fractal of repairing our relational web, because we are relational creatures. We are fundamentally social by our nature. And so the fact that our cultures and our civilizations have not really taught us how to be in right relationship means that whether we start with our relationship with ourselves or with nature, we have to rekindle sacred relationship as the pathway to co-creating a healthier world.
Wow. Yes, that sums up so much. That is amazing. Could you share that poem one more time, too? It's just beautiful.
Sure. It's all alive. It's all intelligent. It's all connected. It's all relatives.
That's beautiful.
Well, you know, one of the sort of early core lessons I learned from Bioneers was that one of the worst systems errors that we've made as a species is imagining that we're separate from nature rather than a part of nature. And really, nature is our source. For me, nature is the home of the sacred. And when I imagine into what some people call great spirit or what's holy and what's most sacred to me, it is embodied throughout nature. And seeing nature as our mentor, as our mother, as our source is very different than seeing her as component parts to be mined and harvested.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. So well said. And I feel like so much of what you're doing at Bioneers really gets right to the heart of that. So would you be open to sharing a bit more about what Bioneers is? And if you're open to it, I always love a good origin story, maybe a bit about how it started and where it's evolved to today, where you see it going from here.
Sure. The short story is it started in a hot tub. My husband, who was then my boyfriend, was researching all about biodiversity and bioremediation. And he was discovering that there were amazing people. And what bioremediation is using natural systems to help detoxify the air and soil and water. And he was finding that there were these amazing innovators from all walks of life who were doing incredible things, really modeled after the natural world. And he was bemoaning to a friend in a hot tub that he was finding out about these incredible people, but no one had ever heard of them. And the friend said, "Why don't you have a conference?" And Kenny said, "Well, I've never been to a conference. It sounds boring. Why would I do that?" And the friend said, "Here's a grant. Go have a conference." And Kenny knew that I had a theater background. And so he came to me, and I had also never been to a conference. And together, we co-created this totally weird event that's 3 days long and happens every year that's called Bioneers. And when we first began it, it was partly in response to James Hansen sounding the alarm about climate change in 1989. So the first conference was in 1990. And it was happening concurrent with a business we were shepherding called Seeds of Change. And a few years later, Seeds of Change went off in another direction, and we stayed with Bioneers. And Bioneers has grown and evolved in many, many ways since. It's become a media company, really. We produce radio series and podcasts that win awards every year. And there are tons of videos and a wonderful newsletter. And we still have an annual event. Some of the ways that it's evolved are not only in becoming a media company so that many more people can access the ideas and innovations that come out of Bioneers, but also I would have to say that from the beginning, perhaps because we are based in the Southwest and Kenny and I both had a deep affinity for Indigenous peoples and cultures, we recognized that Native peoples were the first Bioneers. They are the ones who carry the wisdom of how to live in right relationship, in sacred relationship with nature. And so Native people have always been at the heart of Bioneers. And over time, we've had ahas where a friend and colleague who was on our board, a Native organizer, came to us and said, "I think you need to have your own program, Indigeneity." And there should be its own forum within the conference. And so we now have an amazing program called Indigeneity that's doing incredible work with communications and education and rights of nature work. And it's led by Native women. And even though it's nested within Bioneers, they really have sovereignty over their own project. So it's a very beautiful constellation. And I think the role of racial justice and the absolute interdependence of racial equity and racial justice and gender justice to making peace with the natural world and finding new relationship has become more and more apparent. And so, you know, Bioneers is very unusual in that we cover everything from economy to education to arts to women's leadership and youth leadership. And how do we cultivate ourselves from the inside out, integrating spirit, because all of the behavioral activities are not going to be enough to transform our culture without a change of heart and without our cultivation in this time that is asking so much of us. So I think that's how what Bioneers has become. And I'm incredibly proud and honored that we've managed to stay alive for 35 years. The conference is now in Berkeley each year in the spring, and it's quite a magical experience, and I'm honored to help shepherd it.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much for that and for listening to the different iterations of really how to honor the innovative, what is the innovative work of restoration at each moment. That to really listen to what that is and really to honor that. It's so important. And I loved what you were sharing there about, it seems so connected to what you were sharing earlier about the fractal nature of the relationship in our relationship with nature, our relationship with people, our relationship with the self, that this is all connected. And I love how you weave that all together so beautifully in your work. And also what you were talking about, really cultivating ourselves from the inside out, that this is so important. And that when we do this, this comes through in every single one of our activities, relationships, ways that we orient to the world. And so it's really beautiful that you've cultivated this and co-created it and just are stewarding it really into reality. It's really, really beautiful.
Thank you, Sarah. And I think part of the motivation for us also has been that the mainstream media really covers the bad news, but they don't cover the good news of the world that's being born. And we, and I'm sure all of your listeners, are part of the world that's being born. And we need to feel ourselves in community. We need to recognize each other and the beauty of what's emergent, because otherwise it can be a pretty depressing picture out there.
Yeah, that is so, I mean, that's huge, huge part of the why does this podcast even exist, really, that in a world where so much of what we are seeing reflected back to us are these mirrors of fragmentation, that it is so important to have places that we can go to, communities that we can connect with that reflect back to us mirrors of wholeness, so that we can remember again what it means to belong to an experience of wholeness, both in our communities, and by communities, I mean human communities, communities with the earth, and also within ourselves, that we really belong here, that we are here, and that that is really something incredibly beautiful to be celebrated. And so, yeah, thank you just so, so much for the work that you're doing. I'm curious, for folks who are interested in getting involved with Bioneers, what would you recommend?
Well, the really simple thing is just to go to bioneers.org and explore, you know, sign up for the newsletter. If you go to bioneers.org/NCS book, you can download a free PDF of the introduction to my book. And Bioneers is just a wealth of resource, and it's an exciting place to explore. So I hope you'll go check it out.
Excellent. Thank you. Yes. And I hope everyone listening that, that you do that. It's just an incredible organization. And so, Nina, I was curious if you could also share if you have any stories of any specific relationship or encounter experience that you've had with a plant that's been really meaningful for you in your life?
Oh, I'd love to. You know, early in the pandemic, I'm someone who receives guidance from many different sources. And I have long studied with many native teachers, but also there is a channel that I consult with some regularity and have learned to really trust. And that resource said to me, you need to find a species mentor in nature. And I thought, well, that's an interesting assignment. Okay. And since we were all in quarantine and I live on the edge of a national forest and our dogs walk us twice a day, I began listening for who is my species mentor supposed to be. And I wondered if it was a bird or a creature. And I practiced patience, as I am always doing. And eventually it came through really clearly that it was a plant that wanted to be my species mentor. And the plant was one that I have seen on our land before. It's actually endogenous to the region of the Southwest that I live in. And it's called an Apache plume. And Apache plume is a very beautiful plant when it's seeding, because the ends of its branches turn into these pink powder puffs that look kind of like Cyndi Lauper's hair. And when it's not in bloom, it's not colorful and it's not particularly pretty. But when it's in bloom, wow. And so I started watching it and observing it and listening for its guidance. And what I saw, Sarah, was that over the course of a year, I watched as this land that is in the midst of a 100-year drought, and it's bone dry where I live, somehow the Apache plume was proliferating all over the land. And I thought, oh my gosh, this plant is here to teach me some lessons about resilience. And I found myself learning about, things like camouflage from the plant, because when it's not in bloom, it has sort of sharp, pointy ends where the seed heads usually sit that look unfriendly to birds, you know? And the seed heads, because they're so light and fluffy, the wind can carry them. And so they spread across the landscape. And it was just amazing to me to feel humbled by the brilliance of this plant, and by how grateful I am to be in a partnership with it. And it wound up just being a fantastic thing to do. So I would heartily recommend it to anyone listening.
Oh, I love that. Oh my goodness. Yes. Learning directly from the plants, being in partnership in that way, just the so many lessons that we can learn from the plant realm and how we can apply that to the human realm. And I'm curious, in that experience, was there anything in particular in the lessons of resilience or other things that you witnessed with the Apache plume that you felt could be applied directly to the human experience?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, a lot of it has to do with the uniqueness of its plumes, and the fact that what I began to realize was that those plumes are both an attractant when they're in blossom, because I think they attract birds to them who help carry the seeds on their feathers. But also when they're not in bloom, they act as a repellent. So birds don't land on them because they look sharp and pointy. So being a person who's so focused on relationship, as you might imagine, I'm highly empathic. And it is a practice for me for many years now to explore and strengthen my understanding about boundaries and to learn how to value myself as an instrument of service as much as I value what I'm serving. Because as I'm seeking to redefine, reinvent, and model new forms of leadership, what I'm aware of is that the old form came with a lot of self-sacrifice. And I think it's one of the things we need to change. And as we seek to rebalance the masculine and the feminine within ourselves, regardless of what gendered body we may be in, the feminine, I have learned, thrives in spaciousness. And in this active doing, doing, doing culture, I'm practicing giving myself permission to listen for what my body needs and to pay heed to it.
Well, that is so profound and so important for each of us to connect with. Yeah, that it's really out of the spaciousness that new forms can be created, and that it's so important to honor that part of our being, that part of the cycle, that part of existence, to really allow new forms, new ways of being to come through. There are so many things that you've already shared that just, I feel chills all over when you're saying it, because it just resonates so deeply what you are, what you're sharing here. And you were talking also as well about how in your work that you really are connected with reinventing, redesigning new forms of leadership. And something that you've previously said that I resonate really deeply with as well is how leadership at this time requires us to be in a real dance of listening over speaking, practicing humility, and actively cultivating our collaboration skills. And I'd love to hear a little more about that if you're open to sharing. And really, how do you see listening and learning from the strength of diversity in nature as playing a role in how we address social and environmental challenges moving forward?
Such a good question. Thank you for asking me that. You know, what I've learned again from pioneers is that in nature, the ecosystems that are the healthiest and the most resilient when confronted with disease or weather issues or other trauma, the ecosystems that rebound the fastest are the ones that are most diverse. And the places of greatest innovation are also the places where two or more ecosystems meet. So where the river meets the ocean meets the forest, that's where newness arises. And certainly in this time when so much about our civilization and culture is falling apart in big chunks and dying and in need of rebirth, that, you know, understanding diversity as central to our survival and not just as something that has political correctness attached to it, but as a core principle of how we co-create a culture of thriving is really, really central. And I have to say that as someone who really in my work with women in leadership, I turned towards racial equity learning and really peeling back layers of denial and of protection and of insensitivity, blindness, really, as a result of my white privilege. What I've noticed is that while there are lots of people talking about the hardship of doing that work and how you have to be sort of strong and tough and, you know, you have to be focused and persevering to do it, there aren't a lot of people talking about how much joy it brings, how much life and vitality. And I mean, I am part of communities that I am so deeply honored to be loved and held by. And it's because I chose to do that work. And one of the people I am inspired by, a woman named Camila Majid, says that in order to cultivate a pro-social world, we need to cultivate discomfort resilience in ourselves. And I think that's true, you know? We're just not that fragile. And the discomfort is so worth it. So a lot of what I find I feel called towards is to share with people, wow, how much joy and enlivenment and rebirth and love is available to us if we faced into those kinds of relationships.
So beautiful, so powerful. What you were just sharing about this experience of connecting with the joy and enlivenment when we connect with different types of people, different communities, the diversity, how there is so much joy in the diversity. I feel like nature really reflects this back to us that honestly, anytime I have a question about how I should do something, I just look to nature and I say, how would nature do it? Mm-hmm. And then that really helps to answer the question. And so when I look at all of these incredibly challenging social, political, just the many challenges that we are up against right now, that when we can look deeply into the mirror of nature, we can find incredible solutions to this. And so I just love that you shared that in your own experience of connecting with different communities and just how much richer and more full all of life can become as a result of that. When we go into the edge zones of the ecosystems, when we really connect with the biodiversity of the ecosystems on all layers, physically, socially, you know, in the many different realms of life, just how incredibly powerful that is. And clearly your work in relationship spans so many different realms. And I'm curious to hear, how would you say that nature really supports you in your life's work?
Well, I think of nature as Mother Life. And for me, Mother Life is the divine. It's the sacred. And so in many ways, I feel like Mother Life keeps bringing me relationships and connections and experiences that grow me towards who my soul brought me here to be. That's a little vague. Let me see if I can clarify with an example. Well, you know, one thing I was thinking about in relation to your earlier question about diversity is that I have a mother-in-law who's 103 years old. And one of the things that I have learned from her is the value of maintaining friendships with people of all ages. And, you know, when we look at our culture, there is such an epidemic of ageism and of tending to segregate us within our pods of people who look like us, whether it's age-wise or ethnicity-wise or interest-wise. And so I feel like she has taught me something about aging well, just by witnessing how she maintains circles of relationships of all ages and backgrounds. And I think that's kind of a beautiful example. The other thing that I was thinking about, and this may be taking us in a slightly different direction, Sarah, but bear with me. I was thinking that one of the teachers that has had a really profound impact on me was a Peruvian native teacher who taught me that he taught me two major lessons. And one was, he said, you know that expression, as above, so below? He said, in my culture, we see it reversed, that as below, so above. And the way I understand that is in relation to what we were talking about earlier about cultivating ourselves to meet this time, how our inner lives are as important as our outer lives. And I think that's one of the places where the imbalance between how our culture values things they associate with the masculine and devalues elements associated with the feminine. Carl Jung said the feminine is interiority. And so that was one thing that I love that, because we have Zach Bush about how we have depleted the microbial life of the soil. And that's part of why we're having climate change. It's part of why we're so susceptible to illness. And there's something about that that our inner lives reflect our outer lives. And I've been so aware recently that as the outer world is going through so much change, I've been noticing a lot of change happening within myself. And part of my guidance from nature has been to notice that when creatures are going through metamorphoses, they're not doing other things at the same time. So when a snake is shedding its skin, or when a bird is molting its feathers, they're not hunting or eating or multitasking at the same time. They're focused on their own change. And I thought that was a really valuable thing to recognize, because it feels to me, and this could be my projection, forgive me if it is, it feels to me like we're all being called to change in this time, that the earth is going through so much change and the cosmos that actually we are called into a new level of our humanity. And so I'm finding myself deeply motivated to focus on the inner cultivation to become who I most aspire to be, and who can meet this world in the most balanced and centered way. And the other thing, here's one other lesson I would offer that I think is so valuable. It's only 9 words, and it comes from the same source, from Oscar Miro Quesada. And he said, at the end of an 8-hour ritual, we had been up most of the night, it was like 3 a.m. And he said, if you remember only one thing from this time, remember this: consciousness creates matter. Language creates reality. Ritual creates relationship. And that has been a profound teaching for me. And because I consider that Native peoples are carrying wisdom that's almost more directly derived from the natural world, that's why I offer it in relation to your question, Sarah, which was such a good question. But it's those 9 words have been such a compass point for me and such an incredible teaching. And every time I notice that I have a pattern that I want to change, I make up a ritual to change it. Like, I noticed that when I got out of the shower in the morning, I would look at my body in the mirror and I had all these voices going on in my head. This is like, oh, your hips are too fat, or your belly's too round, you know, all those critical voices. Gosh, I'm doing violence to myself every day when I do that. And so I simply made up a ritual where I create a skin oil and I put essential oils from plants that I really love into the oil. And I spend 3 to 5 minutes when I come out of the shower anointing my body with that oil and pouring love and gratitude into my body. And eventually what I found is that if I do those rituals every day for 6 to 8 weeks, and I'm really rigorous about holding myself accountable, I can alter that pattern in myself. And it's a wonderful way to peel away self-defeating stuff that we don't want to carry forward and to strengthen those parts of ourselves that we do.
So powerful. Wow, that is so beautiful. How the rituals can create new patterns on so many different levels. Would you be open to sharing that teaching again from Oscar Miro Quesada?
Sure. What he said was, if you remember only one thing, remember this: consciousness creates matter. Language creates reality. Ritual creates relationship. And it has been such powerful medicine for me to recognize the power of words and the power of a friend of mine who's a beautiful writer and wordsmith and singer. I've learned over time that I can't call women guys anymore. I have to say either Gaias or ladies, you know? And whenever she hears someone say, killing two birds with one stone, she says, how's about we feed two birds with one scone?
I love that.
So we're all in this moment of reinventing our culture. And it helps me give more weight to why having a moment of meditation is so important, and why taking a few minutes to rest and listen when I need to has value. Because as you know, I mean, listening is just the most important thing I know how to do right now. And there is so much guidance coming from so many different directions. If only we can quiet our minds enough to hear it.
Incredible. Well, Nina, thank you so much. And so tell us, how can people find out more about you, your work, and your book as well?
Oh, well, the book is available wherever books are sold. There is a Kindle version and an audio version, but the print version has discussion guides and embodied practices for each essay that's in it. So I think it has special value. And many women and educators have told me that they're either using it individually or using it with a women's circle or a book circle to help cultivate themselves. And I'm doing more and more teaching online. Bioneers has a new program called Bioneers Learning, where we're offering online programs, and you can find out about me there. And I also have a website that's ninasimons.com. So easy, easy.
Well, thanks so much, Nina. And for everyone listening, Nina's book is Nature, Culture, and the Sacred. Absolutely incredible. Highly recommend you check it out. And yeah, Nina, thank you so much for being here, for bringing your presence, your wisdom, this joyful connection that you have with life, and really deeply listening to what is wanting to come forward and honoring that. Thank you so much. And thank you for being here today.
Oh, gosh, Sarah, being with you is soul nourishment. So thank you. I'm really grateful to have shared this time. And thank you all for listening. And if you do read the book, please give me a review on Amazon, because it matters.
Well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And thanks so much for listening and joining us today on the Plant Spirit Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and please follow to subscribe, leave a review, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.